This is a good time to consider the place of Motown in American culture. Founder Berry Gordy has written his memoirs. There's a new Temptations box set. Gerald Early suspects that the meaning of Motown depends on whether you're white or African American. Early is the author of a book about Motown due out this spring. And he teaches English at Washington University, where he also directs the African American Studies program.
On June 29, 1988, when Motown Records was sold to MCA for $61 million, an era ended in America. At the time of the sale, the company was no longer a force in popular music. Indeed, it was losing money. But it had become, through those wonderful acts like the Supremes, the Miracles, the Temptations, Stevie Wonder, Martha Reeves, Marvin Gaye, a considerable force in the mind of a particular generation. Motown, I discovered, meant different things to different people. And the difference largely fell out, as is often the case in this country, along racial lines. Perhaps this difference, on the one hand, might be best illustrated by Lawrence Kasdan's film memoir of baby boomers remembering the 1960s, The Big Chill, which used Motown music as sentimental cliche markers. On the other hand, the use of Motown music in the superb 1964 film Nothing But a Man was displayed within the fabric of ordinary black working class life. Motown had the two major elements that produce a complex sentimentality in whites: musical black people and youth. For whites, Motown confirmed the charismatic charm of blacks in America. When I talk to whites about Motown, what they talk about is the Motown sound and that they were hip enough to appreciate it. But coming as it did during the high point of the civil rights movement, this music liberated many young whites from the views of their parents, from their parents' culture of whiteness, and this generational freedom was no insignificant happenstance. Blacks talk of the Motown sound too, but what my black friends say when we get together is how we built a black institution and how we marketed ourselves instead of having white folks do it, and how we controlled our music instead of having white folks steal it. For whites, the importance is that the music crossed over. For blacks, that it was a successful black business. By the 1950s, the black urban community had developed to such an extent that it had the supporting structure to make a business like Motown possible. There was a network of strong black schools and churches that produced motivated youngsters who would become the artists and songwriters. There were many nightclubs and taverns that employed black musicians. There were other businesses such as charm schools, record shops, and newspapers. Black radio became an important source for making the black community a market. Finally, an insurgency movement in the early 1950s in African American culture itself produced, on the one hand, the rhythm and blues revolution, and on the other, the civil rights movement of organized public dissent. Motown meant that urban black living had reached an extraordinary complexity of tradition, discipline, and entrepreneurship. In some ways, Motown fulfilled the Harlem Renaissance by bringing together the belief in black-owned enterprise with the belief in art as black folks' main chance to make it in America. Some of this is romanticized stuff about the black community, but within this romance resides an insight about black aspiration and the black American dream. Yet without crossing over, Motown would never have become as big as it did. As a youth, Motown freed me from the blues, rhythm and blues, and soul jazz of my parents' generation, all too adult and old-fashioned for me. Motown seemed young and joyous, something that, because white kids shared it, made me feel that my blackness was a part of America, not apart from it. But spreading blackness across the land made me feel that Motown was a force of empowerment, too. Alas, this is how American nostalgia truly works, and sometimes how it crosses over.
Gerald Early is a professor of English at Washington University in St. Louis. He's the author of One Nation Under a Groove, Motown and American Culture, to be published this spring by Echo Press.